Ramping up your business? The time is near. You've given it heart. Now get it in gear. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
I'm Richard Gearhart, founder of Gearhart Law, a full-service intellectual property law firm specializing in patents, trademarks, and copyrights.
And I'm Elizabeth Gearhart, not an attorney, but I do marketing for Gearhart Law, and I have my own startups and podcasts.
Are you one of the 2 in 5 Americans wanting to start your own business or already a business owner? Stay tuned. This show is about starting and growing your business. Welcome to Passage to Profit, the road to entrepreneurship, where we learn why and how ordinary people just like you started and grew their businesses, and we also talk about the intellectual property that helps protect your innovations. Today on our show, we have John St. Pierre. He's an author, entrepreneur, coach, and co-host of the Entrepreneurs United podcast, and we are really looking forward to speaking with him.
Have you ever been stranded waiting for help forever, seemingly?
More than once.
If so, R.M. Easterly with them, spelled T-H-Y-I-M, has a solution for you. And then after we hear from her, we are going to hear Justin Chen talk about PICKFU, P-I-C-K-F-U, which is really something that I could use because I just went through this situation with someone I'm trying to come up with.
It sounds like a really neat idea. Yeah, I can't wait to hear about it.
So, yeah.
But before we get to our distinguished guests, it's time to talk about your exciting new business journey. 2 in 5 Americans want to start a new business. So should you start a new business journey? Often our listeners ask, how do I identify my ideal customer? Let's turn to our guests to find out how they identified their ideal customers. John, talk to us a little bit about how you identified your ideal customer.
I never actually believed that the riches were in the niches. I actually believed everybody could be my customer. I could actually go after everybody. Let me build this product that everybody can use, or everybody can, you know, we can service everybody. And it wasn't until I realized that the more specific you can be, and I know, Elizabeth, you do a lot of marketing stuff, the more specific you can be on exactly who you're targeting, you can be so focused in your marketing spend and your focus. And when the people see your message, they resonate with it and they click on it. And so the one tip that I learned that changed everything for me was to visualize my ideal customer with very, very, very specific visualization techniques. What is this person's name? Where do they live? Do they have a family or not family? What kind of car do they drive? How old are they? What do they do in their daily lives? Why do they need your tool? And very, very specifically outline 2 to 3 customers that are your ideal visualized customer as a very specific pinpoint. And then you can build around that to get a little more general, but be very, very specific on who you're targeting. And that really helped me. That visualization component changed everything for me.
That's great. That's great advice. Justin, how did you identify your ideal customer?
We kind of had the similar approach to John, where at first we thought we could build a tool that was going to be helpful for everyone. We put it up on the internet. We thought all entrepreneurs could use it, and they can, but it's incredibly hard to market to everyone. So what we did, we started with a hypothesis, and then we just kind of watched customer behavior. We talked to our customers. In the beginning, we thought it was going to be other bootstrap entrepreneurs like us. As it is, they don't have a lot of money. So it definitely helps them.
Not ideal from that standpoint.
Exactly. So ideal is kind of mutual, right? So it kind of pivoted to authors for a while, self-publishing authors, testing book titles and book covers, which are also great, but it's not a very recurrent activity. Then we started having game companies testing characters and all that kind of stuff, marketing assets. And then we finally landed on e-commerce brands. And what we found was that there were so many product decisions that they were making with such a valuable impact. So product design and packaging, branding, marketing assets, and with such frequent cadence that this became our ideal customer. And so it actually took quite a bit of searching and analysis and talking to customers for us to identify our ideal customer. I wouldn't advise people to get caught up on saying, like, I have to know this from day one before starting my business, because you could have a product vision or a hypothesis and you just kind of have to keep testing that and flexing that in the market.
That's great. R.M. Easterly, how did you identify your ideal customer?
Well, I was my ideal customer because I was the one that got stranded. But I ended up working for all the gig companies and the major roadside company that left me stranded for 5 hours on a busy highway, and learned that I was not the only person that had ever been stranded for hours waiting with roadside assistance. But also learning that people needed help inside and outside. It's everyone. So we actually don't have a specific target market, because 2/3 of the population is 18 and up. that will require our service or that would actually need it. So the customer was anyone that needed help.
There you go. Yeah. That sounds great. Elizabeth, how do you identify your ideal customers?
I think talking to people and seeing really who does really want this and who's really motivated and would want to spend their money that way. So I've been talking to a lot of people about the podcast studio. Some people are more serious than other people. And I have changed my target market a little since I first got this idea. I do want to have it for people that just want to do a podcast, but I think I would love to get business clients more.
Yeah.
So yeah, just talking and seeing what people really want.
Yeah, I agree. For the law firm, we've been doing intellectual property law now for 18 years. And really, our practice has evolved over time. So I think our ideal customer has actually changed over that period. And part of it depends on the team that we have. If people have certain skills in patents or copyrights or trademarks or maybe litigation, then our marketing sort of changes to kind of focus and search for clients that need those kinds of skills. You know, I'm not really sure that the search for the ideal customer ever really ends, right? As the business grows or changes, I think your ideal customers can also grow and change. So I think that when people want to start their new business journey, pinpointing the ideal customer is really an important part of that. And so now it's time for our entrepreneur extraordinaire, John St. Pierre, just an amazing guy in so many different ways. And we're so excited to have him on the show. He's an author and he's also an entrepreneur who created two very successful companies, each $50 million. So it actually takes, I think, a lot of skill and talent to do that. And he's not just an entrepreneur, he's a visionary leader. And he co-founded and scaled, as I mentioned, the two companies with over $50 million in global revenue. So welcome to the show, John. Really great to have you here. Tell us a little bit about what you do and what you bring to the people that you work with.
In terms of what I do today, I'm the chairperson of a company called Rhombus Group. We're a private holding company with five small to medium-sized businesses totaling somewhere around $150 million in revenues. I also am an entrepreneur coach, so I work one-on-one with entrepreneurs. And very specifically to your question of my target customer, who I'm looking to work with, you know, it's very specifically, I work with entrepreneurs that have been in business, you know, 5, 10 plus years that have scaled their business to between 5 to 20 million and are looking to grow their companies to 100 million. And along that journey, how do you get through all the pitfalls of growth and the messy middle and the growth paradox and all these different things without falling off the cliff? Because I did. One of those companies you mentioned, I grew to $58 million in global revenues after 15 years of a bootstrap hobby startup business. 15 years later, we're $58 million in global revenues. And I got fired from my own company.
You got fired from your own company.
I've heard of that happening.
How did that happen?
Oh, boy. Well, there's a lot of stories around that one. But ultimately, I lost control of the ship. And what I mean by that is I had a vision to grow this company to 100 million plus. And when we were around $10 million in revenues, I went to my partners and I said, 5 years, 100 million. Let's go. I know how to do this. Let's go make it happen. Had banking partners lined up, had a small investor lined up. You know, let's go. So we raised $5 million of capital, got some bank financing, went started acquiring some businesses, got to around 50 million plus. And I'm like, okay, we're right on target. Let's keep going. Let's raise the next round. But this next round's got to be a little bit bigger. We probably need to raise around 20 million this time to raise the right capital to acquire these last few pieces to get to 100. And in that capital raise, I made some drastic mistakes and basically lost control of the management of the board and the faith of the board in that process. And within 6 months of that capital coming in, they replaced me with somebody they thought was more apt to run the company to the next level and showed me the door. And you know what happened is I was chasing this revenue growth. Meanwhile, my equity was going the other way.
Oh, no.
And I was deluding myself through this process and really didn't have alignment to what I was thinking.
So for our listeners who aren't so familiar with the concepts of raising capital, can you talk just a little bit about what that means?
Yeah, absolutely. I wrote a book recently called The $100 Million Journey, and it came out on November 30th, 2023, which was 5 year anniversary from the day I was terminated from our company. And the first principle in that book, I go through 7 principles of entrepreneurial success. The first principle is build and protect your equity. And when you form a company, what typically happens is you don't have that confidence to go alone. So you bring on partners. Hey, let's go in this together. A third, or 50-50. Let's do this together. Well, how many partnerships like that ultimately stand the test of time? In other words, there's equilibrium. Somebody's providing more. Somebody's providing less. Life changes. And partnerships become somewhat problematic. that, you know, as an entrepreneur, equity is how you will create wealth through this thing called business. So everybody glamorizes raising capital. I was glamorizing it. Oh my gosh, we just raised 20 million. This is great. We're going here. We're going to make this thing happen. But ultimately, equity costs something. And so when you give up your equity, you're actually giving up control. You're giving up your ability to grow your business for the future. And so I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, of which principle two in my book is build your own capital. If you build your own capital through proper net operating cash flows, you don't need outside capital. You don't need to go hat in hand to investors and bankers to loan money, dilute your equity. So control your own fate and don't be glamorized by, I got to go raise capital. Go create your own capital by selling your goods and services.
I think those are important lessons. I think a lot of our audience are people who are looking to start lifestyle businesses, but there's also a percentage who are really focused on creating a big, impactful company that has shareholders and that can grow at an enormous rate.
A lot of startup entrepreneurs have a vision of what they want to build. And it could be a lifestyle business like you talked about, or a high performance big business. But there's also ways that, this is where the magic sauce is, there are ways to create a high performance business where you don't have that many shareholders if you structure it the right way, right? So I'm now the majority owner of a $100 million+ company in control of my own destiny. That's a much different picture than somebody who's trying to grow a large business and own 10% of it. So there's a lot of things to consider in that journey. So, you know, I mentioned principle one, build and protect your equity. Number two is grow your own capital, so you're not dependent on anybody else. Mm-hmm. Principle three is reinvest that capital very smartly. In that company I lost, I was making profits in this business venture. And I was like, oh, let's diversify. Let's go over here. And we were taking good net operating cash flow and putting it into other areas to try and grow too wide and not sticking mm-hmm. with our niche and what we did. And we were making the strong margins of our business. We tried to diversify too quickly. So reinvest smartly is principle three. Principle four is build a culture of intrapreneurship. Build a team that treats this business like your own. You need that in order to grow your business and have people that can really think like an owner within the business. Principle five is protect the house. You went through all the work of building this business, but as an entrepreneur, there's 100 holes in the boat and you plug 99. You guys are attorneys. Where's the water come out? Right? It comes out of that 100th hole you did not plug. It's vulnerabilities. And how many entrepreneurs assess their vulnerabilities, have proper protections, build a group of protectors around them, advisors and protectors like attorneys, CPAs, wealth advisors that can help them protect every decision they're going to make. So that's principle five. Principle six is accessing owner's liquidity. A lot of entrepreneurs think the only way they're going to get cash out of this thing is if they sell it. That's not necessarily true. There are ways and tax efficient ways to move money from your balance sheet of your company to your personal balance sheet. Your personal balance sheet helps the company, helps the entrepreneurs within that company potentially gain a little bit more juice out of what they're doing, and really helps the company propel its growth. And then principle seven, which is the beautiful one of them all, is how do you move from CEO to chairperson? You know, today I'm the chairperson of the company. We have CEOs in all of our companies. I don't operate within the businesses. I'm able to focus at a very strategic level. And the amount of times over my 25 years as an entrepreneur, I heard someone say, John, you got to work on the business, not in the business. I'm like, yeah, that's a lot easier said than done, buddy. My sleeves are up to here. I got dirt all over it. I'm shoveling. You tell me to work on the business. How am I going to do that? Well, you can't do that until you do principles one through six.
It's very, very hard to find the right people in the right position so that you do feel like you can step back and go to the more strategic growth planning for a company. I mean, with Gearheart Law, Richard has struggled with that. Mm-hmm. And how do you find the right people? What do you look for?
I think first off, we have a real big problem with entrepreneurs in America is they don't know how to interview. The real big problem I'm finding is that we hire fast and fire mm-hmm. slow when it should be maybe the other way around, which is you got to be very diligent with how you're hiring people and bringing people into your culture and into your organization. So profiling exactly what you need in each role is very important. But then when we bring them in, we got a secondary problem in America is entrepreneurs don't train appropriately. They throw them to the wolves and they say, oh, we're too busy. Just jump in and figure it out. And they don't provide them enough guidance and coaching and support. But then if you think about today's work environment too, today's workforce, they want to feel like they're a part of something. They don't want to feel like a number. They don't want to feel like a paycheck. They want to feel like they're a part of this business. So how do you create structures? I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs about creating phantom equity structures where, you know, your top level management, as they grow to that level, can actually be part in the growth appreciation of the value of the company as a bonus program, not necessarily as equity, because that's mm-hmm. principle one. You got to protect that. But how do you bring people into the organization and make them feel like they're a part of it and allow them to grow, allow them to fail, provide situational leadership and servant leadership techniques to help foster their growth so they can take on more and be challenged by more and own a P&L of the business. You have to develop that talent. Every business is very different. I know, Richard, a few people in the law industry, and that's a very tough one because of the nature of that industry, and students are graduating that want to work in the high-rise buildings downtown New York City. And it's a different climate, but you have to be really, really diligent at bringing on the right people into your culture, leading them appropriately, and making sure you guide them and train them to, you know, think like an owner.
I agree. I mean, that has been a challenge.
The other part of it is a lot of people go to law school to practice law. They don't necessarily go to become a business owner or a manager. And I think that's probably true in a lot of different professions. And so finding the people who are capable on the professional side, but also have an interest in the managerial side, there aren't that many people out there who really have that kind of passion. Yeah. But we do take steps. We give our team members lots of opportunities to try new things, and they get to work in different parts of the administrative side of the business so that they understand the invoicing and the accounting and the administrative systems. And so over time, my two significant partners have gotten more and more opportunities in those areas.
I want to talk about the coaching. I have a coach right now who's helping me with this podcasting stuff who I adore. She is amazing. And I'm not at the level where I could use you as a coach, John, but don't you think that people need, no matter how much their companies are worth, they need coaches like forever? all the way through.
Let me fall on the sword on this one. During the rapid rise of that company that I lost, I was building a business, and one of my best friends, he's actually the co-host of the Entrepreneurs United podcast. His name is Rich Hoffman. He's an executive with CertaPro Painters. You guys may know that.
Oh, sure. We use them many times. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Rich has been a best friend of mine for 25 plus years. And he calls me in the midst of our rise. Like we're 35 going on 50 million. Like we're cooking. And he calls me and he says, John, I'm looking for a new coach. He's like, would you be interested in a mutual coaching arrangement where I coach you and you coach me? Because we've had this relationship forever and let's do this. And I was like, yeah, Rich. He's like, I don't think I have time like right now. I got so many things going on. And he says, okay. He says, well, who's coaching you? I said, coach, I don't need a coach. Like I have my plan. I know what I'm doing. I don't need anybody right now. Like I have this vision. I'm big in this company to 100 million. It wasn't, but 18 months later, I was fired. Mm-hmm. I didn't surround myself with the protectors, the coaches, the mentors, you know, bouncing ideas by them. Does this sound right? Does this shareholder agreement look right? Like, should I bring these investors in this way? Like, I wasn't consulting anybody. I was just full of vinegar thinking, I know everything that's going on. I'm going to get everything figured out because I have this done. And it was that rude moment of bang, smacking right in the face or in the gut or whatever you want to call it, that I was on the floor going, oh my gosh, what a bozo. I didn't surround myself with the best coaches, this protector group, like I mentioned earlier, attorneys and CPAs and wealth advisors to consult with. Today, I don't make one decision without all my board of advisors around me. If it's a big decision, I'll make small decisions. I'll eat lunch and I'll do different things. And we'll make decisions in our business.
I'll have the turkey today.
Exactly. But any one door decision, which is irreversible. There's a lot of two door decisions we make as entrepreneurs. No problem. You can reverse that. But any one door decision, such as bringing on investors, selling your equity, doing things like that, you cannot reverse. You should never, ever, ever do without the proper group of advisors, coaches around you and surrounding you. So yes, Elizabeth, everybody needs coaches and advisors. And I failed at that once miserably.
I agree. I think all through the whole process, but different coaches at different levels, probably.
Because you really do need the different perspectives of different people, because we don't all see things the same way. And getting input from a lot of different sources, I think, is important. And in some ways, it kind of runs counter to your instincts as an entrepreneur. You're doing it because you want to do it kind of your way, right? Mm-hmm. Part of the entrepreneurial challenge is proving that your theory, whatever it is going to work itself out. And so that's where your focus is. But you definitely need people in your circle who are going to push back and say, no, don't do that. That's not the right thing to do. And at least consider their opinion before you make a decision.
Yeah, the world's best have multiple coaches. I always like to give the Tom Brady example. Best in the world, multiple Super Bowls. He has a nutrition coach, a quarterback coach, a strength coach, a recovery coach, a mindset coach. He's got all these different coaches helping him make sure he's the best at his game. But yes, us entrepreneurs, Richard, like you said, we think we got it all figured out. We don't need any help. That's a sign of weakness. We don't need help. Like, we got this. Well, it's the complete opposite. We need to surround ourselves with the best.
So what do you think is the best piece of advice you've ever gotten from a coach or somebody else?
It's this concept of patient ambition. I had reckless ambition, and that's why I failed. I now exercise patient ambition. Still ambitious. I still want to build. I still want to grow. I want to maximize life offerings. I still got a lot of things going on. But I do it now with patience. I do it now with, I don't have to make a decision today if it's a big decision. I'm going to take my time. I'm going to properly think about it. I'm going to bring my group around me. I don't have to go raise capital today to grow my company faster so I can dilute my equity and put myself in that position. I want to be more in control of my own destiny. And I think patient ambition was the key to that. And once I've got that key from a coach, I was like, yeah, that's it. I need more patience.
That's a tough one for me. Richard's pretty good at patience. I'm not.
I don't know. I feel like I'm impatient on a lot of things because you realize you only have so much time. And you only have so much bandwidth. And so you want to get from point A to point B. And so you're going to rush through some things. But I do think, though, that especially on the big stuff, if you're taking on new big commitments, you need to let it marinate for a little bit and think about it, because how it looks today is going to look different tomorrow.
Well, I'd say you guys have it. Patient ambition.
Yeah, we just have to put it together. Well, right.
This is great. We're talking with John St. Pierre, the author of
The $100 Million Journey.
And he's also the co-host of Entrepreneurs United podcast. But we'll be back with more John and our other guests. And also coming up at the end of the show are Secrets of the Entrepreneur Mind. We'll be back right after this on Passage to Profit.
I represent low-cost airlines, and we know a lot of you are not traveling right now, and we understand. However, if you do need to travel between now and the end of the year, now is a great time to lock in some of the lowest prices we've seen in a lifetime. Hey, in normal times, we can save you up to 75%, but now airlines are practically giving away seats. We have inside deals on over 500 airlines. Here are a few sample round-trip deals we found. Seattle to Vegas, $35. Chicago to Atlanta, $85. Los Angeles to Atlanta, $100. Of course, there are some limitations, but the airlines want your business right now. And cancellation and change fees are flexible. So fly somewhere this year, book now, save a ton, call right now.
858-988-7477. 858-988-7477. 858-988-7477. That's 858-988-7477.
Have you ever met a single person in your life that enjoys paying taxes? No, no one does. If you can't sleep at night because you have a huge problem with the IRS, I've got some free advice for you. This service is strictly limited to individuals that owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes. And if you qualify, we can guarantee that you won't be writing a big fat check to the IRS, or our services cost you nothing. The first 100 people that call today will get a free tax consultation worth $500. Stop worrying about your IRS problem. We can help you, we promise. Call the tax doctor right now. I mean right now, to learn more.
800-917-8546. 800-917-8546. 800-917-8546. That's 800-917-8546.
Now back to Passage to Profit. Once again, Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
And our special guest, John St. Pierre. And it's really interesting. He is helping people really catapult their companies, helping entrepreneurs. He's an entrepreneur coach. We've just been asking him kind of how he does it. He has a book about it. I do see something here in the show notes. Why Cash is King and Queen. Tell us about Queen Cash and King Cash.
Yeah. I've never heard of Queen Cash before.
Well, you know, we want to be politically correct here. Cash is not king. Cash is king and queen. But yeah, the saying is, you know, if there's 100 entrepreneurs in the room, and you said, who measures the performance of their business based on their profit and loss statement? Like 99 hands would go up. That's how most entrepreneurs measure their performance. Mm-hmm. But the reality is the profit and loss statement tells one part of the story. And Alan Miltz, he wrote the Cash chapter with Vern Harnish in the book Scaling Up. It's a really popular business book. And I interviewed him and he said, you know what? The problem is just looking at your profit and loss statement is like reading the first chapter of a murder mystery novel and thinking you know how it's going to end. It's not the full story. revenue is vanity. Profit is sanity. It's really cash is king and queen. And how do you calculate net operating cash flow? And he proceeded to tell me, you know what, John? He's like, I've interviewed 3,000 CEOs and I'm in this business. Not one of them could correctly tell me how to calculate net operating cash flow. Do you know how? And I'm like, no. And by the way, I got a degree in accounting. I was an entrepreneur for 25 plus years. And I understood the P&L very well. I understood the balance sheet really well. And I had graduated to now evaluating my business at the balance sheet level. That kind of graduated to that level. But how much net operating cash flow is your business generating? That will tell you how fast your company can afford to grow. And then there's a Harvard Business Review actually titled that, How Fast Can Your Company Afford to Grow? Well, that was an article that I had missed, right? Because I was trying to grow my company from basically zero to 100 million, trying to grow 50% a year or plus. But the reality is when you run the numbers on what my self-financeable growth rate is, which is there's a way to calculate self-financeable growth rate, my company could probably afford to grow around 5%. But I was growing 50%. Where does that 45% delta come from? Bank debt, investors, over-leveraging your balance sheet and diluting your own equity.
Right.
And putting yourself in the position to get fired. And that's why cash is king and queen.
The problem with investors is, yes, they give you money, but they take a piece of your company. So that's what diluting the equity is, right? So you don't own 100% of your company. They own a piece of it. So the more that you give away, the less of it you own.
The more your business grows and the more complex it becomes, the bigger the challenge is in managing cash flow. And for a long time, I tried to keep everything in my head. And I would look at the bank balance, and I would look at our profit and loss statement, and I would be doing all these mental gymnastics. Okay, I've got payroll coming up, and I've got this credit card payment that's due here. And I'd write it all out. And then based on that, I would kind of try to figure out what bills I was going to pay when. But the problem with that is, if you are going to grow, you have to turn some of the money back into the business, and you don't really know how much of that you can afford to do. And what can end up happening is that you take on debt, credit card debt or line of credit debt. And you can, if you're not careful, you can get yourself into trouble with that, right? And you're trying to finance your growth through those strategies, but then you don't even know if that growth is actually paying off. And then at some point, you just can't go any further with that. So you really need an operation that really runs efficiently and is consistently profitable. But I would be interested in knowing, John, how you kind of attack this cash flow problem, and especially as it pertains to maybe smaller companies that are just getting started, and how new business owners can help manage their cash issues.
Yeah, Richard, I think your listeners should rewind the last 45 seconds and listen to you again. What you said was exactly correct. Exactly correct. You can grow a business. You can grow a business to 100 million and grow yourself poor and not own any of it and be over leveraged and lose it all. That's the story, right? You can grow yourself poor. You can grow yourself out of business, because as your business grows, you need oxygen. And oxygen comes through really knowing what your net operating cash flow is and how you're calculating that. And are you generating enough cash to further finance your continued growth? And so what happens is a lot of small business entrepreneurs, to speak to that audience specifically, is they feel like they got to go raise capital right off the bat, as opposed to, no. Go sell one or two of your widgets or one or two of your services or whatever and generate cash. Then take that cash, know how much cash you're generating, and then reinvest what you can properly reinvest and grow slower on a more patient ambition level where you're fully in control. We're too anxious. We want to like go. We want to chase a shiny object. And believe me, I'm that person. I want to go too fast sometimes. That's why this patient ambition thought of grow the cash you need to fuel your business. And how to do that? The best tool I can give is on my website, which is 100mjourney.com. So 100 million, 100mjourney.com. I have a free workbook on there. There's thousands and thousands of dollars of value on it. But the one biggest tool that's in there, there's a financial workbook where all you have to do is punch in your P&L and your balance sheet numbers, and it'll automatically calculate your net operating cash flow and your self-financeable growth rate. And that's been an eye-opener. I did a session with a company, a franchise company, with many of their franchisees. And in one call, I said, in this hour and a half, I'm going to show you guys how to generate an additional $100,000 of net operating cash flow this year by changing two or three things. And it was all in working capital. It was all on the days that their ARs and their APs are, their inventory days. It was all in those things that sometimes you're just growing. You don't have time to think about. But all you have to do is make two or three tweaks, and all of a sudden, you can generate more cash flow to infuse in your growth.
So what I'm hearing you say is step back or step up to a higher level and don't look at money as just like a dollar came in the door today, but you have to look at it from a really high level and how it's flowing through your organization. I think one thing that Gearhart Law that we've come to terms with is getting a lot of clients is great, but you don't necessarily want every client because if they're not going to pay their bills, you know, then it's actually costing you money to have that client instead of bringing money in.
100%. And in that workbook I mentioned, one of the things that's in there is called a customer cash flow ladder. You can actually look at all of your customers in this particular format to determine how much marginal cash margin you're making on each of those customers. And you're right. A lot of entrepreneurs who think their best customers are their best customers are not. Some of their best customers are not their best customers because of how they pay. You may make a good gross margin on them, but if they're not paying you on time, you're not generating the net operating cash flow you need. You're better off with a lower margin customer who pays you in advance.
Interesting point. We've worked with clients who say, well, we pay in 120 days. So you end up tying up a lot of people who are working, you know, attorney labor, administrative labor, and then you can't pay them from that invoice for 120 days. So you have to come up with a way to finance that. And so it's a big challenge. So John St. Pierre, the author of
The $100 Million Journey.
And he's also the co-host of Entrepreneurs United podcast. Can you tell us how people can find you?
Yeah, absolutely. On any social media handle at John St. Pierre 100. Also at the aforementioned website, 100mjourney.com. You can find me there, all the information, the free workbook, as well as links to Amazon to buy the book if you're interested.
Well, that's great. Please, everybody, reach out to John. If you have any questions, check out his book.
Passage to Profit is a nationally syndicated radio show appearing in 31 markets across the United States. Thank you to the P2P team, our producer Noah Fleischman, and our program director Alicia Morrissey. Look for our podcast tomorrow anywhere you get your podcasts. Our podcast is ranked in the top 3% globally. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, X,
and on our YouTube channel. And remember, while the information on this program is believed to be correct, never take a legal step without checking with your legal professional first. Gearhart Law is here for your patent, trademark, and copyright needs. You can find us at GearhartLaw.com and contact us for a free consultation. Take care, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.